She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties
with Francesca Zappia.
Francesca Zappia.
This is not the group to ask if things are normal.
Being an old lady means I get to eat dinner at 5 p.m.
We're friends. I wouldn't lead you astray.
Fucking grandma.
Oh, she has got all the sass.
Say more.
This is her first whack at adult.
Hello.
Hi.
Tessie.
Welcome
How
back.
How are you? I'm so happy to be here.
Is this your sixth time with us,
I think so.
Because I think you've been on every season except the first one when we actually covered mm-hmm. your first book, Eliza and Her Monsters, which is top shelf, everybody. Top shelf right there.
Yeah. And we were actually discussing that you and Katie were going to take over.
We'll just be the new hosts.
Yeah, you guys just jump in. We're just going to go.
One day, it's just going to be the two of us, but we're going to do it as if we're the two of you. We're just going to say your names.
April Fools!
We won't clarify.
You know what?
It'll be
that
great.
That Tuesday's going to line up one day. You guys just don't know it yet.
But we connected through Instagram after I posted an Instagram video, a reel of me talking about Eliza, me doing some sort of stupid song thing. And you like commented on it. And I had a total freak out. I literally ran down the stairs and showed it to my husband. And I was like practically in tears. And I was like, I mean, should I DM her? Like, should I send her a message? And here we are.
Here we are.
And you're on your sixth trip to come see us, which is awesome.
I know. And I hope I get to make many more after this.
Well, so, I feel like as long as we're doing it, you're always welcome.
Yay.
Seriously. Good. So next April 1st is a Tuesday.
In 2025?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, we don't even have to ask Katie's permission. If you would do it, Chezzy, Katie would, I'm sure, as she's listening to this episode, she's texting us going, yes.
She's probably like, oh my God.
She has somehow gotten the audio file like early. She's live
she's, like,
right,
texting
now.
Us right now.
Yeah.
She's using spy software and watching us.
Yeah.
Oh, she's like, those bitches are always talking about me.
We are always talking about her, though.
We are. Out of love.
We are so excited to have you back again, though. For spooky season.
You've been so busy, lady. Cosplay.
Oh, my God.
All the things.
I've been trying to be less busy. But the problem is, when you have to take a 2-hour nap in the middle of the day, you suddenly have like way less time for anything.
Life.
So it's like, yeah. So it's like, okay, well, I got to get done what I can get done.
You're getting older, Chezzy.
Oh, like I've been trying to figure it out.
Welcome to the old lady.
Oh God. You know what? If being an old lady means I get to eat dinner at 5 p.m. and then just sit in a chair for the rest of the night and read a book and watch early aughts procedural dramas and then go to bed at 9, fine. I'll take it.
That sounds lovely. I've been watching House. That's been
And I've been favorite. Watching Bones.
We've been watching The Mentalist. Great. Oh, it's so good.
Because all three of us are a little neurospicy, so we got to have something.
Oh, we sure are.
You know what, though?
So you're working on a cyberpunk Monte Cristo. Right now,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is a cyberpunk gender flipped retelling of the Count of Monte Cristo.
I'm fucking
so
here for it.
It is
so crazy to me. I love it.
And I found out Scrivener has a feature now where you can see it keeps track of your writing history. So I started the document in January of 2022, and this year in 24, I've written the majority of it this year, but
that's
like
amazing, babe.
It is. I've been blazing through it. Like it is. It has got me in its clutches right now. Like I love The Count of Monte Cristo.
It is such a great story.
It's the greatest revenge story ever told.
It is such a great story.
It's so good. There's so many like big emotions and like big questions in it.
And there's such so many ways you can take it and like flip it and change it and alter it. You could set it in the 2000s. You could set it in the 90s. You could change it and make it a military story. You could change it and make it a Civil War story. You could do so many things with this story and change it in so many ways, and it's still relevant.
Yes. And like, and I had been, I love the cyberpunk genre and just the idea of like, I mean, we live in a cyberpunk dystopia right now, but like
facts.
The idea of like, you have these mega corporations that control their people. You have all these, there's so many themes of cyberpunk fit with the Count of Monte Cristo. Mm-hmm. And it was too good not to do. It was like you can feel it in your brain that like there's something right there. Yeah. Yeah.
And just waiting for you.
If this book ever comes out, we're going to have a long conversation about it, because I have so many thoughts about how to adapt The Count of Monte Cristo, and how like I've seen adaptations where like the character is maybe on like in the jail section for a year or two, because they have to kind of keep going, or like, you know, if it's a YA retelling or whatever, like you can't make them get too old. But it's like so much of it is that festering over like a decade or more of emotion and hatred. And it's there's so much there. And it's just, it's been such a great time writing that book.
That's great.
Okay, well, for your next project, after you finish this one, I want you to take The Cask of the Amontillado by Edgar Allan Poe. And turn that into something, because
I don't think I've ever read that one.
It's so trippy. He like this guy is like drunk, but he's not really that drunk. And his friend is like, "Let me show you where the good stuff is." And then he convinces him that there's niter all around. You just breathing it in is going to make you unhealthy. And then basically he convinces him to keep walking down this hallway until he chains him to a wall and builds up a wall in front of him and just leaves him there.
That's the Buried Alive one.
Yeah.
That's the one that Mindy McGinnis did a duology about.
Oh, I don't know that. But yeah.
Oh, yes.
It's so trippy. And it's just like, he's like, "We're friends. I wouldn't lead you astray, but I am going to murder you."
Murder.
Mindy McGinnis, for listeners who are interested in this, Mindy McGinnis did a duology. Let me see. I can't even remember what it's called now. Mindy, you have too many good books.
Damn it, Mindy.
But yeah, she did a duology that was a retelling of the Cask of Amontillado. The Initial Insult is the first one.
The initial insult.
And The Last Laugh.
It's like interesting. Just crazy. Like, I don't know. Whatever. So are you going to do NaNoWriMo again this year?
No, I will not be, because, I mean, I'll be writing. Mm-hmm. The whole thing that came out with NaNoWriMo and like the AI stuff I did a Substack post about it, but like
I'll post the links to the Substack about this, because it's super interesting.
It's really interesting.
She has a whole there's a whole dialogue about the AI process and us as writers, and I'll let you finish. I'm sorry.
No, please. That was it just like, I mean, first of all, they had problems in the past couple of years with like child grooming allegations, some allegations that I don't know the full details of, but there are documents in my Substack. There's a document that has like all of that listed out if anybody's interested. So that's a big problem. But this year, the thing was that like they have sponsors that have AI writing programs, and they they came out with some statements that were, you could call them badly worded, you could call them
iffy,
sketchy.
They're definitely questionable.
So as long as they are still like supported by AI writing programs and still like in support of AI writing programs and all of that, and as long as they still have, you know, issues with
right
whatever that I'm not gonna, I will not be doing NaNoWriMo.
Yeah, I mean, you're still gonna be writing, but not.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I just won't use the site. Like, won't.
It makes it difficult to want to participate in an event you always participate in when it's turned this muddy.
Yeah. And it was sad because I love NaNoWriMo. I've done it for years and years.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was so good for so many, especially young writers, to find a community. And
it really helps.
And it really helped.
I thought your Substack about it was like, it was so well researched and like I could understand it because I'm not a writer. And I've never participated in NaNoWriMo, but to read what you wrote and get a perspective from an author that I respect, we'll definitely link it below because I love when you're like, I'm going down a rabbit hole. I know, but hang on.
Yeah.
She's got a point.
Just a second. I'll get there.
That makes me feel so good because I spent like, after I read their like statement about it, I was like, it lived in my head. I was like, I gotta write about this. Like, I gotta go down a rabbit hole about this and say it. Even though, like, it's like, I don't even care. I don't care if this gets views. I don't care if people read this. Like, I gotta say something. I gotta get my thoughts out. So I'm glad that it was helpful and that it helped explain things.
It makes it frustrating because as someone that's still not a published author, okay, NaNoWriMo isn't just a community. It's a place where you can get a chance possibly to get published. You know what I mean? There are people that actually peruse NaNoWriMo and find authors they like for publishing. Like, it's not just this one thing that it infects. It infects the whole process now.
Yeah.
And bringing in the AI is a problem for me because we already struggle enough with creativity in this community, right? And being accused of like plagiarism and theft and all this, and bringing AI in and making that new adding that new like element just makes it 10 times more difficult.
And we have a different feeling about it. I mean, along the same vein in the library world, because one of the things we talk about on this pod a lot is that Molly approaches things as a writer and I approach things as a librarian. Librarians don't just put books on shelves. Like, we are information specialists, and AI can be very helpful in compiling information, but not when you're looking for original text. So it can be helpful in research. It can be helpful in cleaning up your paper with things like Grammarly, hashtag not sponsored. But where it's becoming a problem is when it's like, okay, now here's an entire work. Read this, and nobody actually wrote it.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like you. I had to write a long post about it because it's not just AI bad, right? It's like we've had programs for a long time that do things that, like, you know, like Grammarly and stuff like that does it. They're calling AI now because it's a marketing buzzword. And like, it's not all bad. And like, AI can do things, can make processes faster that we as humans don't need to do. Like, and yeah, it makes complete sense in the library setting. It's like, that's awesome. And I'm not against any of these programs for the spell checking, the grammar checking.
Absolutely.
Because they made a
point. I am. I'm dyslexic, ho.
They made a point in their statement of being like, they made a point in their statement of like not differentiating what kind of AI they were talking about. The kind that is seen as bad is generative AI. And the reason it's bad is because we don't know where they get their information from.
Absolutely.
What are they training off of? Everything else is like, dude, I don't care if you use a spell checker. Like, I don't care if you use a grammar check. I don't care. Like, that's totally fine.
There's a difference.
There's a huge difference because it's like you and I've seen no argument for generative AI that I thought was good enough to stand up to any of the cons. Like,
I haven't either.
It's tell me you've never. Tell me you've never, like, spent 2 years working on a book to then have it taken without your knowledge and used to train a machine.
Right.
That it then gets sold to somebody else.
Right.
And you don't get any, like,
credit
for it without telling me that you've never done that. Like,
yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild. The whole AI thing. Like,
yeah. And I feel like we were talking before we turned the cameras on about how the publishing industry is. We told you about how we read Powerless. And for those of you that haven't listened to that episode, go back and listen to it. But what we told you was it's a ripoff of Red Queen. And it feels very much like that. I'm not saying that she didn't write the work herself, but it feels like
it's she inspired read by
things and then just wrote
exactly
the thing, same thing.
It gives you the feeling. It gives you the feeling that publishing would be completely okay if AI wrote all the books, because there's a degree to which they already just want things that are already like other things that we have.
Absolutely.
Because they sell. It's easy to market. It sells, you know?
And it makes me think of things like classic dystopian, like The Giver, where your feelings and emotions that create art are no longer welcome. We're going to just dumb that down and let the robots do all of our feeling for us.
Yes.
And there are more modern. I mean, not that The Giver is not modern, but it's more of a classic YA.
Yeah.
Right.
But the Matched series talks about that. And there's another series.
I'm trying to think. My brain
won't work. It's by the same author that did What If I Fall, I think it's called.
Oh, Delirium? Lauren Oliver?
There you go.
Delirium. My early, my aughts dystopian YA knowledge is intact.
Well, that was like your formative years, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was like high school, college. Yeah.
The Delirium series is fantastic. If you haven't read it, go do it. Lauren, When I Fall, that's the Lauren Oliver book.
We did
cover that on pod. And her books are her audiobooks are all narrated by Sarah Drew, who I absolutely love. And, you know, she's Dr. April Pepner. So, but anyway, it has that vibe of we're not allowed to have feelings and thoughts. We'll let the robots feel and have thoughts and we'll just numb.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not healthy.
And it's not healthy. And like, this is another thing that I've been really excited to get into in this Count of Monte Cristo retelling, because we call these things AI, right? And in this retelling, part of the treasure that the main character finds is a like true AI, like an actual artificial intelligence. And so part of the interesting thing in writing this book has been like, what is the difference between that and the things that we have that we're calling AI that are just algorithms? And like, what does it mean to actually create these things and to have these emotions and to generate it from within yourself? Because as humans, we take in information and data and then we turn it into something. Which I've heard the argument that like, well, that's just what the AI is doing. And it's like, yeah, but Is it? Because it's...
I want to
And there's the whole thing of who benefits from that, who's getting paid for it, you know.
I want to get, and obviously this is impossible, but I want to get Nietzsche's perspective, because Nietzsche wrote a 20-page paper about how art is worthless because it is an imitation that is created by man after their interpretation, but man itself is an imitation of God. And he wrote 20 pages to tell us that. And let me just tell you, I want to know what his thoughts are on AI, because then there's another level of it, right? Like, we created the thing that's making the art.
Yeah. So, wordy guy there.
Yeah. He's very wordy. it's like a requirement if you're going to be a literary theorist or a theorist of any kind.
20 minutes in, can we talk about something that's not super wordy?
I mean, this book was super wordy, though.
It was wordy, but it was fast.
That's so true. This week, like, nice transition, I know. I'm going to say it wrong, I know it. This week, we are talking about Listen for the Lie. Oh, I did it. By Amy Tinner.
Tintera, I think.
Tintera.
I feel that Amy, who is also a YA author, I'm sorry if I just said your name wrong. I've never met her. Tintera. Seems lovely.
This is her first adult novel, right?
Yes. This is her first Wacket adult novel.
First adult novel? Got a Stephen King.
I know!
Good for you, girl. Like,
hit God it.
Damn.
Would you
got the Good folks. Morning America
stamp. Right. I know. It's impressive right yeah. out the gate.
Right.
Synopsis?
Sure.
Anyone?
You're the one that wrote it, so you're the one that reads it.
Okay. If I must. Let's see if I can do this without fucking up today.
I believe in you.
Okay. Lucy Chase's life changed 5 years ago when her best friend is murdered after leaving a wedding together. Lucy is the only witness from that night and cannot remember a thing due to her being injured and having amnesia. Unfortunately, all of Plumpton, including her ex-husband, parents, blame her. And now some douchebag podcaster is covering Savvy's murder. Ben Owens is a murder podcaster. He solved his first murder in one season. But the murder of the murder of Savannah Harper is more complicated than that. So Ben and his assistant Paige are back in Plumpton, Texas for season 2 and are trying to get the bottom of what happened that night in August. Lucy is also back home in Plumpton for her grandmother's 80th birthday. And well, grandma is meddling. Lucy's parents and ex-husband, Matt, want her to avoid the podcaster. But her grandmother is certain he will be the one to solve the case and clear Lucy's name like she deserves. The deeper into Lucy's past we dig, the deeper we get into her mind. She starts to hear things, and that can't be good. Did Lucy do it? Will she kill again? What happened that night in August? Let's find out!
Shall
Wonderful.
We?
Wonderful. Great
Shall
work.
We? Thanks. I only fucked up once. Amy Tintera. Tintera. I will have it by the end of this. Amy Tintera is new to pod. There was a bug. Sorry. And her novel, Listen for the Lie, is her first non-YA book to hit the shelves. It came out the gate with a Good Morning America book stamp and a glowing review from one and only Stephen King. Did it live up to the hype?
So, let me start by saying,
and
here's
the
thing.
I was wild.
I was reading this, and I have been thinking about what I was going to say on this podcast since I finished this book.
Oh, boy.
And I'm afraid that when I talk about it, it's going to sound like I didn't like it. I kind of really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it the way that I enjoy a movie that baffles me.
Yes.
I'm interested to know what you two think. Like, just as a general, like, did you like it?
I listened to the audiobook, and the audiobook was very entertaining with the split information. Okay. Like, the way it broke it up with the podcast, and it kept you enthralled and entertained the whole time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I also listened, and I liked the way that the production was done for the audiobook. I did enjoy this book, and this is not a genre that I typically like. I know we're going to talk more about this at the end of the question, so I'm not going to get too much into it, but I don't believe the ending. So I'll expound on that more later. But I thought it was good. I definitely saw some areas where I was like, okay, I need this beefed up more. And some things where I was like, don't sleep with the podcaster.
Don't do it. Oh, man.
Tom's absolutely going to clip that.
I actually was saying that out loud while I was getting ready for work. And he was in the next room and he goes, okay.
You're like, too late. You've been doing it a while now.
I'm like, we're 15 years in, bro.
To the question, like, did it live up to the hype? I think it is, I think it's a good book. I think it's fine that it had the Good Morning America and the Stephen King. And like, it's fun. It's a fun mm-hmm. book. Like,
it's a fun book.
Go read it. Like, if you want a little mystery thriller, like, it's very fast paced. The chapters mm-hmm. are super short. The main character's voice is like real snarky and like mm-hmm. quick.
Oh, she has got all the sass.
Here's where my first thing came in. I did not realize, like, judging by like the cover and even the synopsis, like, I didn't expect comedy. Like, I didn't expect mm-hmm. it to be as comedic humor. As it was. There was, yeah, there as was much humor. It wasn't comedy, but like humor. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading it and I was like, oh, this is kind of the same voice as like kind mm-hmm. of a sassier, like mm-hmm. rom-com.
Yeah.
Almost.
It's a and rom-com so, with murder.
It's a rom-com with murder. And so
same thing with Butcher and Blackbird.
Rom-com with murder.
Butcher and Blackbird, I haven't read it, but like cover at least is like
it's looks... good. It's good horror. It's got okay. some good horror.
We covered liked it.
I
we
like horror. It
2 weeks ago. Well,
yeah, two oh, okay. weeks ago, excuse me. 2 weeks and ago. And it's very funny. Like there it's really funny. Funny.
There is a lot more laughter than you would think. You're laughing mm-hmm. a lot more. Bryn mm-hmm. Weaver is very funny. And I don't think all the time she's trying to be funny. I just think it's a natural funniness that uh-huh. comes to her writing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I didn't well, so expect humor one, from this either, Chezzy. I think no,
I didn't expect
point.
It. So that was my first, like, it was kind of a stumbling block. I was like, oh, I need to get myself in the mm-hmm. in the right expectations for this
yeah
book. Yeah and then once I got into that I was like oh okay
because I feel like you're right when you think of a person who potentially murdered her best friend the mm-hmm. voice that you are picturing is not a voice of someone who I mean
has
she's
a good sense of humor
so snarky and funny
she's very snarky
and which I, like she calls out her boyfriend who she lives with in the beginning and she's just like he's not even she's man enough to break up with me when he thinks I'm a yeah. murderer. Like, come on.
She's yeah. like, I'm kind of over this guy, but I'm not going to be the person that makes this yeah. done.
Because where yeah. will I live?
She's very aware of, like, who she is and how people
bang for
think
bed,
of her.
Man. Bang for bed. It happens.
Yeah, she's just very aware of, like, who she is and how people think of her. And mm-hmm. she's kind of done. Like, it's been 5 years. She's kind yeah. of over it.
Yeah.
So I had to get through that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that my next sense. Question is physical book or audiobook? And we kind of covered this, but let's talk about the audiobook a little bit and its difference.
Did you read the physical book, Chez, or did you read
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I only read the physical book. Because I have trouble listening to audiobooks.
When I started the audiobook, I texted Chessie and I messaged did. Her. I go, please tell me you're listening to the audiobook because it's so good. And she's like,
because it's a podcast book. And I was like, no.
I was like, you're good. Enjoy.
They did dual narrators with the book. And when the podcast comes in, Ben is narrating his part. So there's a male that's actually okay. being Ben. But the woman narrator who narrates the rest of the book, she's all the female characters that he interviews. So she's mm-hmm. her grandma, okay. she's her mom, she's the friend, she's all...
She's the weird neighbor, just, she's yeah. everybody.
Yeah,
and she's... Okay. I don't know who it is, although we'll put it below, but the woman who mm-hmm. is the narrator on the audiobook is fantastic.
The cast did a great good. Job of that book.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Like, because they, like, had intro music, they had yeah. outro music, they had background
it like it
sounds.
Was a podcast.
They produced it like... This yeah. does seem like a book that would be really fun to listen to as an audiobook.
It was.
Yeah, it was. And I... Like, and I can't say what the physical book would be like. I mean, I have a copy from the library, support local libraries, but I would recommend reading this one as an audiobook just because it does have that natural feel to it. It's like Daisy Jones and the Six, which is
yes.
supposed to be narrative. I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but... oral history, so it works really mm-hmm. well as oh, an yeah. audiobook because it's already supposed to be all these people mm-hmm. telling it.
It's like an archived like archived footage kind of thing with mm-hmm. Daisy Jones, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be an oral history. It's interviews, but I did like the audiobook for this, and I'm not sure I would have had the same like I don't think I would have rated it as high as the physical book if I would have read the physical
You don't
book.
Think you'd have the same experience?
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate.
I wonder how much of reading the physical book made kind of the oddities of this story jump out more than if I had been listening to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the interesting...
You would have been more focused on the audio and less focused on the detail.
Less focused on, like, what's happening now?
Yeah. But the interesting thing is, because traditionally, audiobooks have come from physical books, right? But we actually do have people who are writing audiobooks now. Like, Allie Hazelwood has a audiobook that she wrote. Mm-hmm. She did not write a physical book. She wrote an audiobook script. And we have actors who are coming in and doing these audiobooks. The Audible show, does... Yeah, the show Audible Orphan has Black like a... from, yeah. like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, whatever it was. I guess it was 11 years because James was a baby.
Jesus, it was a long time
they
ago.
They had a whole Audible thing that was written as an audiobook. It was never published as in print.
Mm-hmm. Audible has audio studios now too, where it's like old timey story, like old radio, right? Where it's like stories and clap sounds and like the whole thing. Like,
I was
going to
say, they, I think so. Doctor Who for a long time has had audio dramas and that's been a thing for a long time. And I think now it's just becoming more of a thing in like America.
God bless Doctor Who for always rocking that for us.
Isn't it funny how we recycle these things? Because like right now, the 90s trend of everything looking 90s and people wanting cassette tapes and stuff. And I'm like, do you know how hard my generation worked so that you don't have to do these things? And here we are recycling it. And now we're recycling. I mean, podcasts are essentially talk radio.
It's talk radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what Liv got one of her besties for her birthday this week? Last week? A reusable camera with film, the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
Because she saw it at Five Below and she goes, this is neat. And they go, yeah, it's just a camera.
Like, do you know how expensive it's going to be to develop that film? It's so expensive now to develop thin film.
You can't just go down to the CVS anymore.
You can't
and
send it off in the envelope. And
yeah.
Remember when we guess we'd get 99-cent prints? You drop the roll off and you just,
And you just hope and pray that one of them was a usable picture.
God bless.
Those were the times.
Time.
Anyways, our main character... Chapter 1 lets us know she is the focus of a true crime podcast, and her life is in shambles because of it. Lucy is very honest throughout this book, minus the fact most of her memories of that night are gone. There is a point in this book there are points in this book we do not believe. Is she an unreliable narrator?
Yes.
Words.
Is this my autism coming up? I'm like, wait, is she? Because we think she is, right?
Right.
Like, she's unreliable because, yeah, she doesn't remember. But, like, to me, I'm like, well, she's still telling the truth because she doesn't remember. But
it's variation of the truth. It's her version of the truth.
And as long as you believe that she doesn't remember, then you're like, oh, okay. I think she's still an unreliable narrator, yes.
I don't think that the issue is that she doesn't remember. I think she's protecting Savvy. I don't think she's even protecting. I don't want to give away the ending yet. I don't even think she's protecting the murderer or herself.
Mm-mm. No.
I think that she has to keep this locked in the depths of her mind for Savvy. If anyone really knew who Savvy was.
Yes. And I think that comes out with like the sub question on this is like.
Mm-hmm. On the next one,
the fact that that's the line that she keeps hearing is like, which.
Let's roll into that.
Let's
roll into that. I'll go right into that question for you. Right. Nope. The sub question. She is hearing things throughout this novel. Mm-hmm. Did this help or hinder the storyline? So now you can go. Sorry.
No, you're good. At first, this happens like chapter one, like very early, she's hearing these voices and she's been hearing them for a long time. And I'll kill whatever. And like she has
that stapler and put it in between his eyes and he died.
She has these almost constant like invasive thoughts about how to kill
people.
So
you guys are telling me that's not normal?
Well, But like, it was,
I don't know,
so
that we're the ones to ask if it's normal or not.
No. This is not the group to ask if things are normal.
This is not the group.
She does this, and like, this was one of the first things that I was reading this book, and I was like, oh my God, she is like, I kind of got what was happening, but I was like, it was unsettling in a reader way, like almost taking me out of the narrative, how often she was thinking about killing everybody around her. Mm-hmm. Strangers, loved ones, everybody.
It really makes you think she's might be schizophrenic a little bit. Right?
Yeah, but without the weight that like actually being like having that kind of mentally ill character in a book like this requires. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, I was like, I don't know what's going on right now. Like, what's happening? But then by the time you get to the end of the book, it's like, okay, yeah, the fact that she was having all of these thoughts and her brain was working that way makes sense because of what she was repressing.
For me, that's one of the things that I felt was like underdeveloped as I was reading it the whole time. I'm like, why does she keep having these invasive, intrusive thoughts? Like, come on. Clearly she murdered this girl. Like, I mean, come on. This is so, you know, whatever.
Obvious.
But
see, to me, it was like, it was the other way. It was like, you're having her think all these things that mean that means that she didn't do it. Cause it's too obvious.
I actually never really thought that she did it. And I think you're probably more right, Chezzy, that I was thinking like, okay, obviously this is too.
You want me to believe that.
Yeah. She's convinced herself. I think part of it is she had convinced herself at one point that she did this and that that was, the voices were the burden of that.
But what it actually, when we get to the point where it's revealed that the voice that she's hearing is Savvy. Is the girl who was murdered. Mm-hmm. When you get that that's the voice in her head, and then you start finding out who Savvy really was, it was, to me, very similar to the book that we read with you last year, which I know Molly's got a question about this, but
it's the next question.
Oh, perfect. Well, good. We're rolling right in.
Transition. I want to say one thing about the voice, though.
Yeah.
So with the whole hearing savvy thing and the way she talked about therapy and the voices before, she withheld from us, the reader, that she kind of knew it was Savvy. Mm-hmm. She just kind of forgot it was Savvy. If that makes sense. Because she's like, oh, this voice is Savvy. But then she talked about in the past how therapy helped her get rid of the voice. So she really did kind of already know who it was.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think she ever questioned who it was. I think she always knew that that was Savvy's voice in her head. Mm-hmm. I think she just didn't. She kept that from the reader. Like, we didn't get to know that because that would have. That's what you do as a writer, right? If you're going to write a plot twist, you have to have something that you're leading us with, but you put up a wall. That was our
because
wall.
Because you can't have all the you can't have all the answers right away, or it's not a good book.
Yeah.
I don't know. Memento was a fantastic movie, and we had all the answers.
That's true.
Memento is a great movie. As the book went along, like, not only is it like, oh, you find out that the voice is Savvy, but then she also starts having, like, hallucinations of Savvy herself. And like, it gets more intense as her memories start coming back.
And she's rehashing things as, like, she's going there because it's becoming,
So it kind of, like, it didn't bother me.
It was rough for me listening to that.
It gets real serious later. Yeah.
Like, you can feel her pain.
I thought the way that it was written was actually kind of smart. The way that the remembrances, the things that she's remembering about Savvy, they start speeding up, right? Mm-hmm. So it starts really slow with her remembering like what happened until it's getting to this point where we're getting whole chapters about her sitting in Savvy's bar.
Yeah.
And Savvy telling her that she killed somebody, that Savvy killed somebody.
What I also like about that pacing is because it makes the book faster too. I think that's what you're saying. I'm done.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And I also feel like crime podcasts or crime like Netflix series, hashtag not sponsored, like that's what they do, right? They start the story really slow and then they've already made up their mind about what really happened before they start this. Ben's a fucking liar when he says he hasn't decided yet. He's a fucking liar.
I have so many thoughts about the podcast aspect of this book.
But it continue. Starts really slow, and then we get this big, meaty middle where they've clearly infused whatever their agenda was on it, and then we get the conclusion. And that, to me, is what the book was written that way.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's very smart writing. As you say, April, smart writing.
I agree with that.
Last year, Chessie, you joined us for What Lies in the Woods. Yes. How do you feel this compares? Both have similar ratings and reviews on Goodreads. Do you think they're equal?
No, because I think What Lies in the Woods is tonally what I thought this was also going to be. And this one is for the fact that it has so much kind of dark content in it. I mean, there's domestic abuse, there's
rape,
a lot of like, there's rape, there's all kinds of stuff in this. And but it has a light tone. Mm-hmm. Whereas What Lies in the Woods was very much
heavy-handed.
It was dark.
I want to say it was dark, but it was like it was tonally more serious. Yeah. It was a little more dour, I guess I'll say.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it.
I don't think, because like, I don't want to say heavy-handed because I don't think it's bad. It's just they're handled differently. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting to compare and contrast them because they are very similar stories, just done in different ways.
Yeah.
I enjoyed both of them, I think. If I remember What Lies in the Woods. I barely remember it.
When April first mentioned it, I was like gapping. I was like, what book?
I remember the girl's body was under the big rock in the woods.
It was
in a little burrow hole.
For me, what I think the difference is, so I think that tonally, yes, this one is not as dark. I feel like if you were to make them into movies or miniseries, the lighting would be so much darker, and What Lies in the Woods, you would get that creepy vibe. And this one wouldn't be necessarily light. It wouldn't be like super bright, but it's not going to be the darkness of the other
one.
This
is Netflix, and What Lies in the Woods is HBO Max, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yes.
That makes sense.
But I feel like
I
feel like the difference is What Lies in the Woods, we get from the victim's perspective, and Listen for the Lie is from the potential murderer. And you would think that would make it darker, but it doesn't, because the victim in both is the best friend.
I freaking love you remembered all this. Good job, April Brain.
Good work, April.
Thank you.
Yay, April Brain. Molly, dump that book as soon as we were done. Hey!
Well, I also think, Molly, that it helped that I was in charge of writing questions for that one. Those ones stick with me longer than the ones that you write.
Oh, that doesn't matter for me. I'm just a...
You sound like my... Molly, you sound like my sister. It's like, oh, I read that book 2 days ago. What happened in it?
No idea.
I don't know.
This one, I was struggling so hard to write questions, and I kept texting April. I'm like, I just got to go get the physical book. There is no way I can do this without a physical copy.
Yeah, I do think that our main character here also brings a lot of humor that we don't get in What Lies in the Woods.
It definitely lightens it up. The main character in this, in Listen for the Lies, has...
Lie.
Oh, God damn it. That's a new counter where I add S's to shit. In this book, I'm not even going to say the title. God damn it. In this book, the main character has more humor towards her life. Like, well, it's my fucking life. Oh, well, let's fucking do this.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm fucking stuck with. Let's go.
But I think... I don't want this to come across offensive to any of the YA authors out there, especially you, but I think this book would be darker if this weren't her first non-YA.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like, true.
Your book, Katzenhammer, is dark as... That's a fucking dark book.
It's dark.
Bro.
But you worked to get there.
Yeah.
My guy.
Like, you didn't go... Don't, like, it's either you go out the gate or, like... Because you can't... you can't go straight into it for, mm-hmm. especially, you know, like my first couple of books were contemporary, like, mm-hmm. I've got anxiety. I'm trying to.
We know.
And then suddenly it's Katzenjammer. Yeah. And like,
seriously, and be, whiplash lady.
Like, it could be that this was just the kind of book she wanted to write. Cause like, I think what also helps the tone be lighter is the fact that like that rom-com aspect of like the minute Ben shows up, you're like, they're going to get together.
Don't sleep with the podcaster. So we're talking about podcasts. Perfect for the next question. Most murder podcasts really like to either cover current events or dead cold cases. Mm-hmm. This is just 5 years post this happening. Why would somebody pick something up so recent that didn't have much press? It was, you know, it was popular in Plumpton and everyone in Plumpton knew about it, but it didn't get national news. It didn't have a bunch of covery. So why pick this? Why come here for this, Ben?
It literally feels like something that a nerd, true crime podcaster bro would do. He would hear about this murder. He'd get really interested in it and he'd be like, I'm going to go do this. Nobody figured this out. I'm going to go figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Which is, and he like, definitely is, because he talks about that, right? Like he,
if yeah. anybody knows a real life Ben Owens, I have a case for him. Her name is Michelle Harris. She went missing on 9/11/2001 in upstate New York. Okay, the same 3 hours from New York City, the same day the Twin Towers got hit. She went, just vanished.
I am interested now.
Michelle Harris. Michelle with one L. I'll send you the stuff. It is.
Okay.
Oh my God. It's my hometown. I am so obsessed with that case. Anyways, but it's not the point. I'm sorry. Continue on, guy.
I just feel like 5 years is not enough time for this, especially because it wasn't a big, well-known murder. And like, I'm going to go back to comparing What Lies in the Woods again. That was a podcast being done after these were little girls when this happened. They were like, what, like 12 or something. And now they're like in their 30s. Like, it's a significant amount of time. I don't think there's enough time that's passed. I mean, the cops aren't even investigating it still. I feel like they had enough evidence to at least charge her and they never did.
I didn't. Well, go ahead and finish.
I don't understand how they couldn't have charged her. But it's because like, they didn't even charge her, and then 5 years later, somebody still wants to cover this as a podcast. It just doesn't.
Nancy Grace didn't even pick it up. I mean, how is this popular?
Okay. Let's just get into it.
Do it.
The ethicality questions that I had about this podcast were immediate and. Mm-hmm. Piled up the farther I read, which again, not to say I didn't enjoy the book, because I did, but the whole time I was like, okay, he is putting these episodes out in real time,
which
is impossible. I don't know how you would make a good story out of that. You're doing that thing in news where you get a piece of information and you immediately put it out. Like, did tell you everyone about check it. Enough?
You're not like, supposed to insert yourself in the story, and he did.
You're inserting yourself in the story. You are putting this information out, which then, like, infects all the other information you get after that. It's only been 5 years. So, which, I mean, there are podcasts about things that didn't happen that long ago. But, like, it's... First of all, they are done by like podcast networks that have research assistants and they spend like months or years putting this information together.
It's just him and one chick doing it together.
It's him and one person doing it together. And then they sleep together.
Don't sleep with the podcaster, my guy.
Hold on.
Can we element of it, them sleeping together, made me feel like what he did was Google unsolved crimes and find the prettiest girl he could that was suspected of murder and do a podcast on her so that he could bang her.
It it does feel like that thing that, of like he was looking up things. That, he saw that she was a pretty white like pretty white girl. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
but that's why pretty white women going missing is more on the news than any other children of color.
Than any children of color, than any black women, than any Native American women going missing. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, we care about this.
Get
it's
me
a white
about
lady.
How we ignore the Native women that go missing all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Don't even get me started on that.
There are whole podcasts about that.
Yeah.
But like he, oh, like I that baffled me.
Jesse's and then, really upset.
This chat will
we
tell
need a
you.
Montage
I was
here of just Chessie going,
like by the end of the book,
just
I was like, I think
Chessie.
I was like, I think I love this because it's baffling to me. Like it's
right.
Well, I had a good time, I guess. But like by the time there is a this is a minor spoiler, I guess. There it's is fine. A sex scene later in the here. Book where they like. She, the main character Lucy, realizes that being like telling she tells Ben finally that she has these murderous thoughts about yeah. people all the time.
The voices,
and she realizes that turns him on.
He's
and then
it's
they
sexy.
Have sex. He thinks it's sexy. They have sex while she is choking him out, mm-hmm. and it's like
not no
this is exactly what I thought was going to happen.
No.
This is what
he
I was
wants
like,
a murderous woman. He's the kind of guy that marries a chick on death row.
It's like this is what I think people accuse true crime podcasters of being, which is like kind of
so
having,
you know what? I'm going to jump into this question now. Do you feel Ben Owen was sincere in his motives?
No. I actually do just from like if we take it out of the intent of the author, I think her intent was yes, he is. I think he was deliberately set up as the quote unquote good guy against all the bad men
mm-hmm.
like in the town who don't care about women. I think Ben was supposed to be
seriously. All good. The men in this town are trash.
Okay. But being
every
the antithesis of what all of these men were, Ben is still a slime ball who wants to bang the hot chick and pretend that she's
who killed her best
him.
Friend.
Like,
he's still like, it's that thing of when you take it outside of intent, and you mm-hmm. look at it from, like, objectively, you're like, that's still a slime ball. Like,
yep.
It's still weird, buddy.
He still thought she might be guilty. He was sleeping with her knowing.
He was writing the ending of the freaking series.
Like,
he was writing the ending convinced that she... Ugh. Next question?
Well, hang on though, because along those lines, I think Chessie said something earlier about him doing it all in real time, which just would never frankly happen because the point is that you're not supposed to insert yourself. Like, you're supposed to be reporting on this. And of course, crime podcasters do insert themselves. It's like any sort of documentary. They are swaying you towards one direction. But he inserted himself by literally inserting himself into her. And then he ends up getting to be the hero in the end, right? Which is just such bullshit. Like, you don't get to be the star of the podcast. Like, that...
He is
the star of the podcast. But I mean, the star of the you know.
But that's not the point of him bringing a podcast up, right? The whole point of him having this podcast is that they focus on Savvy and her murder. And he is turning himself mm-hmm. into a main character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, that's the thing about this book.
Ethically,
like,
it is yucky.
It feels like it should have been saying something about the ethicality of true crime podcasts and how they're run, how things happen. But it never ended up saying that.
We're even left
and she
with
had
the
window to do it.
Yeah, and we're even left with the feeling that they're going to meet up again because they both
like
have the
they're
going to
absolutely they're going to keep and, another bang.
And what the fuck is she going to do? She doesn't have a place to go home to. So
right,
her
she
shit's
may
right.
just move in with
in
him.
You know very well he's going to be like, well, it wasn't that big of a deal. Now that I know you're not dead murdering, so you could stay. You want to stay?
It's yeah. Oh yeah, the dumb
boyfriend.
Boyfriend
you could
in
stay.
LA. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but it's just so. I wanted this book to say more about the ethicality of true crime podcasts and
same
and how they do things and the way that they conduct their business.
Agreed.
And mostly what the book talked about was like feminism and things like that, which is great. But continue.
I will.
I will. I will stop now so you can get to the next question.
I yield the floor. We get all the small town vibes from Plumpton, Texas, including the judgmental neighbors, former classmates, and of course, Lucy's very own family. What did you think of Plumpton and how they spoke about Lucy on and off the podcast?
I thought it felt realistic for a small town. Like it was great. It was infuriating as it should have been.
It's murder in Stars Hollow.
It is murder in Stars Hollow. You know what? The detail that I really liked that is going to make no sense to anybody that doesn't live in Texas or didn't live in Texas for very long. The dad being the person that makes all the food is such a Texas thing.
Really?
Okay. Yes. Like in Texas, it is a big thing for men to be the cook in the family.
Barbecue.
Run the barbecue, the smoker, the pit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so for her dad to be the person that cooks all the time is 100% accurate for a Texas man.
All right.
I feel that, like, I know I said this is murder in Stars Hollow, but this story has to be in Texas. It has to be in Texas.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, in a lot of places, I live in an incredibly small town here in Virginia, a very, very small town. And I feel like we do have people that stay, that like grow up here and stay. But a lot of this community has been transient. It's been military families who have moved in and decided to stay here and raise their families here. It hasn't been what you'll get in Texas in a small town. In Texas, in a small town, you will get the generations upon generations of people.
This is our town. What are you doing here, outsider?
Yeah. It's exactly what it is.
It is exactly that. I got called. We lived in League City, which is a suburb of Houston, which is huge. Okay. League City is massive. I'll put the numbers or Wikipedia or whatever down there. Okay. I got called by one of the neighbor kids a carpetbagger because he was studying the Civil War. And he's like, that's what New Yorkers are, right? Carpetbaggers when they come to the South. And I was like, valid reference, kid. But because the carpetbaggers moved from the North to the South.
Feel like that is a very not relevant.
He thought it was. He was in eighth grade and thought he was so clever for calling me a carpetbagger.
Eighth grade finding a word and being like, I'm going to use this now.
I'm going to call my neighbor, the New Yorker, a carpetbagger next time I see her.
He stewed on it too.
He did. You know, he heard it. He heard it. And, you know, he doesn't pay attention in history class. He just heard it and goes,
that's my neighbor.
I'm a getter. That's a good one. But yeah.
But I mean, you have to be in a small town in Texas. And it has to be West Texas like this was. Yeah. It can't be Texas. It's got to be West Texas.
And her parents believing her husband over her.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Oh,
my mother has said several times to me, directly to my face, that in an event of a divorce, she is keeping Matthew. So when I tell you that your parents sometimes pick your spouse over you, that's real.
Yeah.
Listen, yeah. I know Barb's joking. But I would pick Molly. Sorry.
Yeah, I would also pick Molly. I don't know Matthew. I would drop him in a pit.
Hi, Biggs. Nice to know ya. He's been in a pit. He's been working.
Katie would be the one shoveling the dirt back on after.
In the pit. She's gonna just go borrow Steve's backhoe.
Yes,
but no. Matt's been in a room full of screens this past month. He is a fucking champ. That guy.
Yeah.
He's been working turnaround, so his life is hell right now. We appreciate you, Matthew Joseph, so much. Yeah. Okay. Back on task. I'm trying, man.
You're doing a great job.
You're doing really well, actually.
I've been pretty good at pod lately, which is kind of fucking freaky. So I'm thinking my meds are about to stop working.
Oh, no.
My ADHD meds have been working for 3 solid years.
That's pretty
never happens. I've never had 3 consistent years with any medication. It is wild. Okay, where are we? I got it. Since we are on the topic of Lucy's family, let's talk about how they treat her and how they covered for her when they assumed she did it. Was the actions of Lucy's parents and her ex-husband, Matt, warranted?
I mean, I feel like they were looking out for her best interests and no one else really was. But
I feel like
they never actually asked her if she did it.
They just assumed whatever Matt told them was the truth.
They assumed she did it.
Because that's what Matt told them.
Right.
It's a case of like, we're taking care of you because you're a little woman and you cannot.
You're so soft and delicate. You may get the vapors.
Yeah. Like, you don't know what you did. You can't. No, just say, oh, you killed somebody. Oh, no, we must protect you. Like,
I love that she said it's too bad she didn't actually get convicted because her mom was made to be the mom of a murderer.
Yes. Yes.
And her dad being like the guy that's like super serious all the time and like,
you tell me if anything happens. You don't tell anybody else. Just me. Yeah. Daddy's going to take care of it.
And that's like 100% a Texas daddy thing. Like, yeah. He doesn't know how to talk to you.
It reminds me of the show Private Practice where the one woman called her dad Big Daddy.
Yes. The blonde.
Mm-hmm. I can't think
Big Daddy
name.
Died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was Georgian. She was from Georgia, though.
Yeah, but still.
I get your point.
South.
South. Mason Dixon Yankees line. Here, we get so it.
I was going to say, I live in Indiana. That's all South to me.
Yeah.
If it doesn't get snow, it's the South.
Well, we get snow in Virginia, but we're still the South. But anyway, I think what the big problem was is that they never actually took her at her word. Her mom just kept saying guilty people don't act or innocent people don't act like this, which is not true because what actually happened was trauma for her too.
Her mom saying that constantly to her and her going instantly before she says something, oh wait, an innocent person doesn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Like for her to have to constantly do that to herself and her mother fuck her up that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there is so many like tabs and addendums that they have put on this that have made her mental health worse than the event itself.
Yeah.
So much of the way her mom treated her made me so angry. Like in a way it was supposed to. Like it was so
kind
about
the point
like there's
of it,
there's
though, right?
It was the point. That was the point. Like that was I think that was the strongest part of the book was the way that the people in this town, including the other women, treat women.
Mm-hmm. When minus grandma.
Minus fucking grandma. Grandma was
great.
Which
makes it very clear that she is obsessed with Lucy and only Lucy. And the rest of her grandchildren are shitheads.
But like, you want to know why I feel like grandma was the only woman in the town that was like that? Because all the other women in town were fighting over the best guy, quote unquote, even though they were all garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and grandma was just banging any man she wanted to. She didn't give a
anybody.
Fuck. No I one loved, was sticking by grandma.
Yeah,
I love that grandma was one like, thing and one thing only, and then you're gonna get the fuck out.
She's like, yeah. I got limited time left on this earth. Uh-huh. I'm gonna get as many orgasms as I can out of it. And if you're not doing the
good
job, you're gonna move on.
Grandma knew what she was about. She, like, oh, she was great.
You know who I want
she
to play her?
To
Dolly
compete.
Parton.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yes.
Except
I want
Dolly to
Parton
play that role.
Has been like in a committed marriage for a
right,
very
but
long
that's
time.
What would make it funny, right? Because that's not who Dolly is.
Mm-mm.
Her and her fake plastic boobs, right? Because we all know that's a shell now that she wears.
Oh, yeah. So she's wonderful. I love Dolly. Who doesn't love Dolly Parton?
You
hate and everything
going
about
to
her.
People
she's
that
the
are.
Best. I love her interview where she's like, I made my image because I thought the town whore was pretty. Like it was literally the town whore.
I'm
gonna
say something crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you guys seen the new ads for Dolly's cookbook with her sister?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm. No.
Her sister looks like Beyonce's mom. Just white.
No,
like
she doesn't.
Both have they have the same plastic surgery.
I don't
the
think
same
so.
Plastic surgery.
I don't think so. That cookbook is really popular.
Wait, Chessie's on it.
I'm looking this up now.
That cookbook is really popular at the library. It's people are is really it? Enjoying it. Yeah.
I've heard good things about it.
Mm-hmm. I want this cookbook.
Same.
Good looking cooking. You know,
I am not a big country fan, and there are a lot of people that will say that. Most people, if they like country, they like country. Most people don't have an indifference to it. It's like, I either like it or I don't. But when it comes to Dolly, every motherfucker in this country is like, that's, yes, queen. We got
God bless Dolly Parton. That's our national that's our freaking national emblem right there, is Dolly Parton. Fuck the bald eagle. It's Dolly Parton. Put Dolly on all the coins. I got three more questions, guys.
Okay, let's get through them.
We'll move back to Dolly after. If a podcaster is trying to figure out if you murdered someone, do you think it's a good idea to sleep with them?
Don't sleep with the podcaster.
No! Your entire podcast is junk at that point. Mm-hmm. Nothing you have
it's looked just trash.
Up or said or done can be
you are no
anything.
Longer a and reliable he, reporter.
And he tried to justify it that he could separate what they were doing versus the podcast. But his pod partner was like, you're full of shit. You can't separate this.
You can't separate this. And also he had too much power over her. There was a power imbalance there. Mm-hmm. Like massive power imbalance. Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, it doesn't matter if you say that you can. Mm-hmm. The you fact change, of the matter is you can't. Like,
yeah. You change a few words in this book and you move the structure around and this turns into him manipulating her into sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just the balance, like you said, Chessie, the power balance.
Yeah.
The fucking power balance.
Like,
it's not appropriate.
No, and it's wild because I feel like by the time I got to the part where they were like sleeping together, all the stuff with her hearing voices and like seeing Savvy, and then the sleeping with the podcaster and the way that the podcast was formatted and was coming out in real time, I had the thought in my head that like, I could never get away with writing this. My agent would not let me write this book. She'd be like, this is not like, there are too many inconsistencies here. Mm-hmm. To do this. So like, I'm glad that she was able to write it and get it published and that it's getting
good. I'm happy for you, really, Amy. However,
but like, I am again baffled at the fact that this is in the form that it's in.
So well, let's talk just about not realistic because nobody is writing a murder podcast not knowing the ending. I've said this already.
Yeah.
You have an agenda when you go into it.
Exactly.
I mean, you do. When you think about, you know what? I can't think of the name of the man who, the first big murder podcast that we got.
Oh, Making a Murderer?
Yeah.
The Netflix show or Cereal. Like actual?
Cereal.
Cereal.
Adnan Syed. With Syed. A dude.
Thank you.
Adid, what his name is?
Adnan Syed.
Yes, thank you.
They
I'm
went
sorry.
Into that believing that he Adnan. Was 100% innocent. They did all their research and they released it weekly, sure, but they knew there's an innocent person here and we're going to prove his innocence.
Right.
And they did. I mean, I think he's just been recently was charged again with something
and he's back
lower.
In jail.
They released him, but then they are trying to recharge him in a way that's supposed to not be double jeopardy, but pretty much fucking is. But anyway, I mean, they knew. And that's what you do when you do a murder podcast. We do a book podcast, but Molly and I know our opinion of the book before we go in. We don't film our episode waiting to figure out what we think.
I just wait for you to tell me what I know.
it feels...
Yeah, you're right, April. You're completely right.
You are right. It's like I don't know how you would go into that not believing one way or another. And
it's like... I get you want to track your investigation, but you're going to hit a wall eventually in this kind of thing. That's why we pre-record shit. You know what I mean? In case the bad shit happens.
There's no way he's going to release an episode in the morning and then that evening he's going to be at dinner with the same people that he's reporting on.
No.
Oh my gosh.
Let's talk about that because there's a perfect scene to explain that. The birthday dinner for grandma.
Yeah, it's when I was
when he shows up
after he released the video or the episode of calling mom the whore, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like saying that her mom slept with Savvy's
boyfriend. That was so good.
Savvy's boyfriend who's younger than everybody else and dumb.
Yeah. And she's like, yeah, whatever, I did it.
Like, he's so dumb.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, Ben's just hanging out with the family. It's like,
he's like, yeah.
What?
Well, I want him here. Yeah, it just doesn't. The math ain't mathing.
It isn't mathing. And like, I can't imagine that you would ever put them out. Putting them out in real time is wild to me because like, you don't know what you're going to get. Like, yeah, you might not have an ending.
Mm-hmm. No, what if the murderer like, figures, comes for you next, guy? Huh?
And that's what happens. That's what happens when any news is immediate, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, this is a terrible example because it's obviously horrific, but 9/11 is what I'm going to use because I remember how this information was coming out in real time because I was in college when it happened. When the first plane struck the first tower, the news thought it was an accident. There was no evidence that this was like actually an act of terrorism, that somebody was choosing to do this. Yeah. That's why we saw the second plane hit the second tower live.
We were all so surprised.
Because we were all watching the first tower when the second plane came in.
Right.
And then it was like, oh shit, maybe this isn't just an accident. You know, that kind of unraveling, that kind of journalism.
Real time.
It's just not the way that journalism has been intended to be released. And with 24-hour news channels, which CNN was the first one, we didn't really have a choice but to release information quickly. And then it gets us back to basically the times of yellow journalism, where you're just making stuff up and commenting on it, or you're having an event and you're commenting on it, as opposed to actually letting the event happen and then reporting on it. It's
and
just
doing research into it and stuff. Yeah.
I know I'm complaining a lot about this, but I gave this book 4 out of 5. It was a good book. Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna pick apart the pieces that don't make sense.
And we do that. The more we like a book, the more we're gonna tear into it, guys.
Yeah,
because
if I didn't like it, I wouldn't want to talk about it that much.
Yeah, I'd just be like,
I thought
dumb.
It was bad.
So for one of my second to last question, let's talk about the ending.
Okay.
Lucy, remember, did I do something wrong?
No. I don't like the ending.
Okay. So Lucy finally remembers what happens. Come to find out, her best friend Emmett was the one that did all of this. Out of fucking left field. Mm-hmm. He's the murderer. He tried killing her. He killed Savvy. And then he tried freaking gaslighting her into thinking it was an accident. Thoughts,
okay.
Well, we tried to convince her.
April, you said that this you didn't think this was real.
Believable. I didn't believe it.
Okay, you didn't think it was believable. Okay, go. Say more.
So I
say
know
more. Give me more words.
I know that we in these kind of stories we have to be led astray so that we can get to the meat of who actually did it. I would have found it more plausible if Savvy would have attacked Matt and what the hell is our main character's name? Lucy. And Lucy retaliated and that's how Savvy died. I would have found that much more believable than this person who feels like one of the only safe people in this town for Lucy.
Yeah. To make him
the murderer.
As trash as everybody, every other man.
I literally would have believed that Ben actually somehow came to Plimpton 5 years ago, murdered Savvy, and then did a podcast on it. Like,
I really thought it was the dad. Like, I was certain. I thought it could be the dad. It really did. I think so. My theory was that Savvy and Lucy were having an affair.
Yeah,
dad didn't like
she
it.
She did that. She texted
dad
me.
Dad didn't like it and did what he had to do to make sure Lucy stayed with her husband. However, that backfires. That was my theory.
Yeah. Whenever I'm reading a mystery novel, the first thing I look at is like, okay, who is the author not red herring me into thinking is the murderer? And then that's the person who actually did it. And a lot of times authors will like, they'll get past that at a certain point and they'll do some loop-de-loops and whatever. But in this one, it was like, oh, Emmett, she never thinks Emmett had anything to do with it.
No, because she had to punch a boy for Emmett. Like, so Emmett I can't thought, stand up for him own self. Why would he kill her?
Well, so see, you and really I thought, did think the whole time that he was the murderer.
Not the whole time. But like by the maybe 60 to 70% mark, I was like, Emmett is looking pretty good as like a very suspicious person. Just from a reader standpoint of like, she hasn't tried to cast any doubt on him throughout this whole book. Like not, and I felt like it with the themes that she was going into of like how men treat women and how other women treat women and stuff. It was like, okay, I could see the Emmett being the best friend and the relationship that they never had. And like when it turned out that like, oh, he wanted her this whole time. Mm-hmm. And like that made sense to me. I won't say that I loved it. Like I wasn't, I often feel like the reveal of a mystery is never as good as like the mystery itself in any case. But like,
have you read The Perfect Marriage? Because shit.
No.
That is so good. Geneva Rose. Geneva Rose can write. Geneva Rose can write.
The Perfect Marriage.
Yeah. And she's got a sequel coming out to it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to leave this up on my computer.
You definitely should. You definitely should.
So, yeah, when we got to the ending, I was like, I believe this. I was, when she started, like, chasing after him and, like, trying to kill him in that moment at the end, I was like, girl, no.
Run.
What are you doing? Stop.
Stop.
This is not how
Drive
we do this.
Drive your car elsewhere.
Yeah. But like, it didn't, I believed it. I don't know that it was wholly satisfying, but I was like, okay, yeah.
Good enough.
I feel like, I mean, I see your point that he was never a red herring, and so there's that, but there's no good men in this town. Because Emmett is bad,
good men in
there's
this town.
No good men in this town.
Even the men they brought in, the men that were pumped in even, that weren't locals, were trash.
There were no good men
anybody,
in this town.
No.
It is wild, the fact that, like, at a certain, also the point of, like, everybody sleeping with everybody else. I am not a prude.
That is a small town, though. Okay,
that.
I grew up in a small town. That
okay,
is so
this
realistic.
Was my question. That was my question, because, like,
it is so realistic. Everybody sleeps with everyone. It's so gross.
As an asexual person, I was like, hold on. Is this a small
this is
town?
I grew
like,
up in a
behavior.
Small town, and I live in a small town now. This is not normal behavior. Maybe in my weird ass town in upstate New York, but that's not everywhere.
In my weird ass hometown, yeah,
there's a possibility. Okay, cool.
The 20-somethings and the teens are sleeping with everyone. They're fucking hoes.
Okay. So the fact that there was like. There were no good. I would almost argue that there weren't any good women either, except for her grandma. And like,
that's fair.
And it's,
I mean,
like,
Lucy was even iffy herself.
Lucy was iffy, savvy. Like, it's not to say that, like, I don't need people to be perfect, right? Mm-hmm. You can be.
Humans are designed to be flawed.
We're designed to be flawed. I like a flawed female narrator. I like a flawed best friend character. Like, but it did feel like. There were no, just normal people
men.
Just doing their lives. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
it just, to me, that sort of aggression is not something that you can hide. If you are capable of murdering someone and being that aggressive, someone else knows that side of you. I just have
a
hard time.
Someone has to take that brunt. Someone has to take that beating.
Even if they
he
don't want to talk about
like
it.
Well, I mean, they did say that, what's her, Nina?
Yeah.
The woman he was dating.
He was abusive to her.
He was abusive to her. She did say that. So, like, it felt like he was supposed to be the, what do you call it? Manifesto writing, best friend, I got snubbed, I'm always the best friend and never the boyfriend.
Never the bride,
being
always the bride.
Friends with
kind
a woman,
of a sentiment.
Being friends with a woman, being best friends with a woman does not make you have some sort of special
you don't get first
insight
dibs.
Into her panties. You don't you didn't just earn that because you're her friend. That's not how this works.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how any of this works.
Okay. Final thoughts, April Goodreads. Did I miss anything that you guys wanted to talk about?
I gave it a 4 out of 5. The only thing I feel like we didn't touch on, which I did mention a little bit earlier, is that Savvy actually has killed somebody. She killed a man in college who sexually assaulted her.
Yes.
And she says she enjoyed it. And so she wanted to kill Lucy's husband, Matt.
Lucy's husband, Matt,
Because he was abusive to her friend.
Yeah.
I also think it's really interesting.
Somebody's for life.
I think it's really interesting how Savvy's mom handled her interviews throughout. Because initially, she was completely, Lucy did it, Lucy did it, Lucy did it, right? And in the end, when we have revealed that Emmett actually is the one that killed Lucy, Lucy's mom still doesn't know, or Lucy's mom, Savvy's mom still doesn't know that Savvy killed anyone. There's only two people that know that, Lucy and Savvy's sister.
Lucy's Savvy's sister, yeah.
But she had it in her head that Lucy wanted so much to just be a part of Savvy's world because Savvy was cool and popular and she was the salutatorian of her class. But now she's just the barmaid, right? So this downfall from grace, of course someone would want to be her friend to try to, you know. And in the end, when she's asked by Ben how she feels now knowing the truth, she basically still says that she doesn't believe it, that she still thinks Lucy's guilty.
And you know what's wild is some people will always have a certain mindset. You will never be able to break them of that.
Do you guys know the, is it Amanda Knox?
Amanda Knox.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that story, I watched a few documentaries on it. I found it fascinating because I did a study abroad in college. And it's just, you know, really interesting to me. There was only DNA from two people in that room where Amanda Knox's roommate, I'm apologizing because I don't remember her roommate's name, but there's only two people's DNA in there. There's the victim and one other person who is likely the murderer, right? And it's not Amanda Knox's DNA. But the girl's family 100% believes that Amanda Knox got away with murder.
They
are still trying to get her convicted, even though there's no DNA evidence of her being in that room.
Yeah. And I think I watched the Netflix documentary, maybe.
That's one of the ones I watched,
But it's the one with, like, where they talk about, like, how the crime scene was, like, they didn't do they didn't keep the crime scene, like,
secured.
Secured. And they have interviews with some of the Italian cops on there. And, like, the cops in that were so obviously biased.
Yes.
And it's like, they made their mind up. They made their mind up. And it's like, even if she did, we're at a point where you cannot prove, like, you can't prove that she did it. So, and it's like, I understand when it's the victim's family, I understand that difficulty, right?
Yeah.
Like,
by the way, the victim was Meredith Kircher. I wanted to make sure we said her name on here. So,
okay.
Meredith Kircher.
Good.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. When it's the victim's family, it's like, you almost can't, like, fault them for that. Right.
Yeah.
And I mean,
her behavior was very strange, but she was also in her early 20s. She was a kid.
I mean, didn't we probably all in behave shock, strangely? Like, as 20-somethings. And I don't know how I would react if I was a part of a murder investigation at 21. I was a fucking ADHD mess.
Yeah. And like, in a foreign country.
Murder?
In, like,
this is her roommate that was murdered. Like, that's a shock.
So it was somebody she cared about, you know?
Yeah. Any time that comes up of, like, and they did it in this book, of the, like, you didn't act the way that you should have. And it's like, how should you act? Nobody knows how you're going to act in that situation.
So how does an innocent person act?
You're not thinking about it. Like,
right.
Well, and yeah. In Lucy's case, it wasn't just that her best friend was murdered and she was there when it happened. She had a brain injury. She was also attacked.
Literal brain injury.
A traumatic brain injury, which means her like her old sense of like being and like she had amnesia from it. Like there is no way.
And that's she real. Would remember. So my mom has a TBI. She had a car accident 7 years ago. She had a seizure while driving, drove across oncoming traffic doing like 50, hit a tree. She totaled her car. The paramedics said the only reason that she was alive was because she was unconscious when she hit the tree. Because we tend to like brace ourselves and that actually can make things worse.
But she stayed relaxed.
Yeah, because she was unconscious from the seizure. But she lives in a facility, a care facility. She's able to take care of herself and communicate well, but she has no recollection of what happened. She doesn't remember having the seizure. Yeah. She doesn't remember going to the hospital. She doesn't remember coming home from the hospital. And a TBI is like part of your memory is like your brain is dead. Like it dies. It's sort of like Alzheimer's, like a piece of your brain is not functioning. So she's lost like my whole childhood. So when this girl's talking about like, I know it's crazy. She doesn't remember like that's me awful. Growing up
chunks.
So when they're talking about Lucy having a TBI, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense that she can't remember. Like I was totally on board with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All that made sense. And that's what made it extra frustrating that her family, her closest relatives were like, you like not even trying to understand what she was going through.
And they gave her no protection. They let everybody just bug the shit out of her as soon as she was home from the hospital.
Yeah.
Then her zero mom protection. Apologizes to Savvy's mom. Like we're
and her
make
husband
right.
kicks her out.
Yeah.
How are you gonna make it right if you think your daughter killed her daughter?
Yeah.
How are you gonna make that right?
Yeah.
Wild.
Well, we've enjoyed having you on the pod.
Yeah. What fun. What a great talk.
I love having you on. You're just so fun. I know. You're great.
I love being on the pod.
It's smart. It's smart. Smart.
Well, come on again next season.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Nice. Last season we did The Grace Year with you, right?
Yes.
Last season. Oh, that was such a good book.
Gosh, yes. So, Chessie, do you have anything coming up you want to promote?
You know, very soon I will have something that I can talk about. So soon,
You know what, guys? Just go buy a copy of one of Chessie's books. My favorite is Eliza and Her Monsters.
Yes.
I would say Eliza and Her Monsters is still my favorite, but I really like Grey Miss Fair. So if you haven't read that one, pick that one up too. Ooh. I thought that was
my
really
second
cool.
is Cats and Yammer.
I was going to say, if you're feeling a little spooky in the October mood.
Cats and Yammer is a good one.
Cats and Yammer is like horror.
If you don't have kids and if you have kids in like school age, maybe don't Cats
maybe
and Yammer.
Not.
It's a little panic inducing at times.
It's a little much. Grey Mist Fair is like spooky fairy tale kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm. I really
and then
like
now entering Adamsville is like Scooby Doo type of
Scooby Doo.
I really liked Grey Mist Fair. I thought that was really, I was really good. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I do love that book.
Actually, we just referenced it.
It's a good spooky season book too, though.
We just referenced it actually because we were reading another book. What book was it? I don't even remember, but we were reading another book where we were talking on the pod about how she was a baker. Oh, The Unfortunate Side Effects of Heartbreak and Magic.
Yeah.
She's a witch who's a baker. And
like
and
how
I said
witches don't always have that.
This is the cliche that Chessie talked about when she came on for Grey Miss Fair. That they're always a baker.
They're always a baker. It's like it's cozy and it's a lady's job.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's fine.
I like her
it's
being
fine.
Rich.
I love bakers.
Know.
I'm a
Have
baker.
Have you seen any female bakers? Their biceps are massive because
they're huge.
Fucking fold bread all the time, man.
Yeah, you gotta need that bread.
The bread, man.
I can't bake. Mm. You have to follow a recipe to bake. I just throw stuff in a pot and add paprika until it's Hungarian. That's how I cook.
So till it's bright red.
Exactly.
If it's not the same color
Molly,
as your
you've
hair,
had my
you don't
cooking.
Want it.
I'm a good cook.
I'm not saying you're not.
I'm just saying.
So let's talk about what we're going to do next week. Yeah, we are finishing spooky season with this book, How to Sell a Haunted House by Grady Hendrix. Somehow I am supposed to be the one writing questions for this, and I'm terrified by the title. Why did I pick this book, Molly?
I don't know. Hillary from Ireland keeps telling me that we're going to pee our pants.
Oh. I mean, look at his fucking author's picture. He's holding a fucking skull. This is not going to be good for me.
Why'd you pick it then?
Because I felt like we owe the fans true horror. We've never given them, like, true horror.
Should read The Exorcist or, like, Salem's Lot or something.
No.
You ever want to read a Stephen King book together? I'm there with you. I'll be there.
We could do Pet Sematary.
Pet Sematary.
The only Stephen King books I've read are, he has a YA or children, something like that, book that was like in the 90s. I read that. Mm-hmm. And then I've read Shawshank Redemption, which was actually a serial.
I've never read that.
That put together. Yeah. And the same thing with The Green Mile, which was a serial that was released and then put together. So I've read those. I have not read anything else because that is scary.
Too spooky.
Spooky. But I'm going to read How to Sell a Fucking Haunted House next week.
So, guys, until next time.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week when April is leading for How to Sell a Haunted House.
Who knows?
Bye! Can you hear the joy in my voice about this? Bye, guys. Bye.
Thanks for coming, Jessie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jessie. Thank you for joining us on Book Besties with special guest Francesca Zappia. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was Listen for the Lies by Amy Tintera. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins. Editing by Thomas Watkins and music is Sleep Sweetly by Brigida. Don't forget to follow the book besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the book besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.